Course Committee, welcome. We are a subcommittee at the moment because we have straggling members out in the hallway, but they will join us subsequently. I'd like to get started on time because I'd like to conduct our business and conclude the committee by 4:15 today. The chair, yours truly, is traveling out of town, and I need to catch an airplane. And Senator Starr has an obligation in this district. So we will move right along. Our agenda was shortened up considerably. So I think we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 305. And I'll just invite all three people who are up to testify. Scott Root, Chris Davey, and Margie Lowe.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 305 establishes the Oregon Injured Workers Retraining Grant Program within OSAC. It also establishes the Oregon Injured Workers Retraining Fund and appropriates money into the fund continuously to the commission. As printed, it requires determination of surplus in the Industrial Accident Fund to be made during an annual report. And again, as printed, requires annual transfer of 50% of the surplus into the Oregon Injured Workers Retraining Fund. However, you have the Dash 1 amendment that was provided by Senator Morissette's office, which clarifies and requires that SAFE determines the surplus in the Industrial Accident Fund, requires SAFE to transfer 2% of the surplus into the retraining fund, and requires SAFE to transfer $5 million into the Injured Workers Retraining Fund from the Industrial Accident Fund. This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Glad, did you want to testify also?
If I have a minute, please focus.
Okay, I'll put you on the list. And also, I'll give my usual admonition. I don't know why I slipped up today. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off or turn it on vibrate. If it goes off during committee, you'll be making a contribution, a generous contribution to the Common School Fund. And if you wanted to sign up to testify, the sign-up sheets are over there. If you've not signed up on this bill, let Ms. Tuso know, and we'll get you on the list. We are now officially a committee. Mm-hmm. So with that, I will let Mr. Root, this is your bill, I believe. So why don't you start out and identify yourself for the record?
My name is Scott R. Root. I'm a co-founder of the Injured Workers Support Group and their volunteer lobbyist.
And go ahead.
We are presenting legislation this session that establishes the Oregon Injured Worker Retraining Program with SB 305 for your consideration. SB 305 establishes the Oregon Injured Worker Retraining Fund and requires a one-time payment of $5 million from SAFE's reserves at the time of enactment. It also appropriates money in the fund continuously. Let me stop. We've made amendments to this bill. I'm sure you all have them.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm reflecting in my testimony.
Okay.
Let's start back here. SB 305 establishes Oregon Injured Worker Retraining Fund and requires a one-time payment of $5 million from SAFE's reserves at the time of enactment. It also appropriates monies in the fund continuously from interest earnings at 2% of any dividend returns from the Industrial Accident Trust to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, giving them the authority to make retraining grants from the fund. Educational grants will be awarded to certain covered injured workers that have exhausted all of their benefits and remedies except for lifetime medical for their work-related disabilities and subsequently have been unable to obtain employment in an occupation that pays wages at least equal to the wages currently being paid for employment that was the worker's regular employment at the time of injury and has experienced job loss or extended periods of unemployment. The need for this bill became obvious during the Management Labor Advisory Subcommittees on Vocational Rehabilitation during the interim. Statistical data from the Workers' Compensation Division showed that before 1987, we were sending more than 8,000 of our seriously injured workers through vocational or educational retraining programs. As of 2002, we were down below 800 injured workers that were actually qualifying for vocational retraining due to a series of legislation that dramatically changed the face of our vocational assistance programs. In 1987, with House Bill 2900 enacted, it made major changes to our workers' compensation system, which significantly affected vocational assistance by limiting eligibility. In 1990, Senate Bill 1197 allowed injured workers and insurers to negotiate a release or settlement of non-medical rights, including vocational rehabilitation, through claims disposition agreement. Senate Bill 369, effective 7/1/95, further limited eligibility for injured workers making aggravation claims. House Bill 2900 went into effect in 1988, redefining the eligibility criteria, stating a worker is eligible for vocational assistance if the worker will not be able to return to a previous employment or to any other available and suitable employment with the employer at injury, and the worker has a substantial employment. This language effectively limited eligibility to the most difficult cases and has decreased the number of claimants considered eligible for assistance. Many claimants who would have been considered eligible, especially for early assistance, are no longer even receiving a determination of eligibility. Most claimants ineligible for vocational assistance would have been eligible for other return-to-work assistance programs, though, especially with the introduction of the Preferred Worker Program in 1988 and the Employer at Injury Program in 1993. However, statistics show for workers with claims in 1997 that used the Preferred Worker Program benefits, including worksite modifications, only 35% were still employed with the employer at injury in the 13th quarter. The question arises, what happened to the other 65%? And did their worksite modifications go with them when they changed employment? For the workers who were placed in the Employer at Injury Program and were determined able to return to the job at injury after claim closure, only 43% were still employed with the employer at injury in the 13th quarter after injury. This compares to 39% of the workers with disabilities with no restrictions and 30% for the temporary disability cases. These retention rates come from far back, so we don't have any current data, but the percentage rates are excessively low and clearly show that the system and the employer retention rate is not giving enough benefit to the injured workers for the costs that are incurred to our workers' compensation system as a whole for these programs. Armed with the knowledge that most workers will have more than five jobs before retirement and most low-wage positions have a physical component to them, which restricts eligibility for employment for the disabled worker, the portability of an educational degree for a disabled worker far outweighs the effectiveness of any money spent on worksite modification programs or other early return-to-work assistance programs. Therefore, the reasoning of allowing an injured worker the ability to use a degree to compete openly in our job market with healthy individuals for sedentary-type positions makes sense. It would still allow them to achieve and compete within our current workforce. Many of our citizens over the years have been offered governmental educational benefits, including timber workers, welfare recipients, and prisoners within our penitentiaries, with 2 to 4 years of educational Pell Grants, along with subsistence pay provided them. However, our Oregon injured workers over the years have paid the ultimate price and sacrifice for our state and our economy by giving up their common law tort rights to sue their employer for their disabilities they sustained on their employer's premises without giving the benefit of an educational degree to their disabled workers. Therefore, as the old saying goes, you can give a person a fish and feed them for a day. However, if you teach that person how to fish, you can feed them for life. Oregon's injured workers need educational degrees to keep them from falling to the point economically of having to use our social services and Social Security because of their work-related disabilities. We are not advocating a total change of our current workers' compensation system at this time, although we believe that someday it should be addressed legislatively for the sake of affordability for our employers, as well as fairness and equitability for our injured workers. What we are advocating at this time is the creation of a new educational program and a standalone fund acting as an economic safety net for those who recovered under our publicly held nonprofit trust fund, the Industrial Accident Trust, at the time of injury. For these reasons, I ask you to move this bill forward to any necessary work sessions needed for its quick passage with this committee's approval. Thank you for allowing me to testify here today. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Root. I don't see any at the moment. Let's hear from the rest of the panel, and then some questions might develop. Mr. Davey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Chris Davey with Safe Corporation. I'd like to present some observations about this bill, and my understanding is that the Dash 1 amendments are intended to be the ones that might go forward rather than the original version of the bill. First of all, I'd like to credit Scott Root for his work on behalf of injured workers. He spends a lot of his time at the Management Labor Advisory Committee and in this building looking after the interests of workers, and not just for himself, but for the body of injured workers in general. And he's brought some good observations to the people that study this system. In fact, he and I have probably spent 2 or 3 hours just talking about this particular bill since the bill was proposed. Nonetheless, we've still got some concerns about this bill. And first of all, I think what this bill attempts to do is to create a system that is a supplement to the workers' compensation system in terms of vocational retraining. And the question really is, if there is a problem with the workers' compensation system as it exists today, and that workers are not getting access to vocational retraining, then why aren't we trying to fix the workers' compensation system rather than trying to create another parallel system where workers will follow a different track and not be part of the system that is currently regulated by the Workers' Compensation Division? Just by way of example here, the vocational assistance that's provided today under the workers' compensation system allows workers to be eligible for retraining if they are unable to return to a job that pays at least 80% of what they were making before they were hurt. And they can get 16 months of retraining, or in exceptional cases, 21 months. Now, Senate Bill 305 proposes that any worker who is unable to return to a job that pays as much as they were making, or 100% of the pre-injury wage, that worker would be eligible for one of these grants. So the way that this might work is that a worker could be eligible for vocational assistance through workers' compensation and perhaps be retrained for a job that might pay 90 or 95% of what they were making before they were hurt. Then on the completion of that retraining program, they would automatically be eligible for another grant under this program, because that may still not enable them to reach 100% of their pre-injury wage. So the first point, I think, is that if we've got a problem with the workers' comp system, let's fix the workers' comp system rather than creating another track. Secondly, the way this bill is configured, it provides this benefit only to those injured workers whose claims were handled by Safe Corporation. And workers don't get to choose who their insurance company is. Their employer makes that choice for them. And so I think there's a fundamental question about whether, if we're creating an additional benefit, whether a benefit ought to be available to every injured worker in the state rather than just those who by happenstance happen to be insured by an employer who's insured by Safe Corporation. The Dash 1 amendments I received at about 1 o'clock today, and so I hastily amended the testimony that I was preparing to give, but the Dash 1 amendments propose that whenever the Safe Board of Directors declares a dividend that would be payable to employers, that a certain percentage of that dividend or supplements of that dividend would go into this injured worker retraining fund. Our board obviously has not had an opportunity to review those amendments. They do have a meeting scheduled for next week, and I will review this bill with them and get their feedback as to whether this kind of funding mechanism is something that they would like to lend their support to. And then the final point is that, like most bills that relate to workers' compensation, the Management Labor Advisory Committee takes a look at these issues. They did a pretty in-depth study of vocational assistance during the last interim, and they did come up with some rule changes and statutory proposals that would make those benefits more available and more quickly available than they have been in the past. This proposal was not something that they reviewed then. It has been presented to the Management Labor Committee now during this legislative session, but up to this point they haven't taken a position on the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Morrison, well, do you have a question, maybe?
Well, I guess my question is, when was the last time significant changes were made to the workers' comp system without a court order? In other words, how easy is it to overhaul the system?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Morrison, the system was changed quite considerably in the year 2001.
As a result of
then-Governor Kitzhaber feeling that the system was moving too far away from injured workers and needed to swing back. And so the management, there were actually a two-tier management labor approach was put together to come up with what was Senate Bill 485 that was passed in the 2001 session, which really provided a number of additional benefits to workers that haven't been available before.
Follow up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to me there was a court decision that right around that time that prompted some of the action that took place.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I think you're probably referring to the Smothers case.
Yes.
That dealt with the question of whether an on-the-job injury is, or whether the workers' comp insurance is the exclusive remedy for somebody who's injured on the job, and I think that was a small part of what went into that bill, but it was only a portion of it.
Any further questions?
No, but I have some comments at some point. I'll
I have comments, too. We'll just hold those. Before we get to Ms. Lowe, Mr. Root, Mr. Davey brings up a question in my mind, and that is, why would only workers who are insured to the State Accident Insurance Fund be covered under this program?
Madam Chair, the reasoning behind only having the covered injured workers under the Industrial Accident Trust came basically because of I was covered under the by SAVE and by the trust, and through past research it really is supposed to be a nonprofit trust fund. And I couldn't figure out any way, as Chris Davies had mentioned, of having someone from Liberty Northwest or Travelers or what have you somehow benefit from the trust reserves if they weren't covered under the trust. And, you know, in my mind, I thought that was the only way I could really make the argument. I would much prefer having all injured workers covered,
mm-hmm.
but then again, I mean, the opposition, SAVE Corporation, could come back and say, well, hey, you know, they weren't paying premiums into the trust fund, they weren't covered by the trust fund, so that was kind of the reason behind the whole thing.
I see. Okay, the other arguments Mr. Davey raises, I guess those come under the rubric of comments, but as a chair, I can take those liberties. I think Senator Morissette raised a very curious comment that's very real, but we don't change the workers' comp system very often, and there were some changes in 2001. And I had to smile when you talked about MLAC, because there are two members of this committee who don't really like the current makeup of MLAC. So that one will just sit there for a moment. So let's hear from Ms. Lowe and see what you have to say.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margie Lowe. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. We're here today to learn about the bill and to hopefully help the committee understand what the role is of the Student Assistance Commission, and to have a process where we can, if this bill moves forward, have an understanding about what our role should and could be in doing that. The Student Assistance Commission administers over 320 private and public scholarship programs for the state of Oregon, in addition to the Oregon Opportunity Grant, its need-based grant for higher education. So it's definitely in line in terms of helping people achieve their post-secondary educational goals that this program would be considered. But we have a number of things we'll need to learn in order to be able to effectively administer this program. It involves some decisions that need to be made in a vocational rehabilitation context. Presently, our expertise is in the financing of higher education and the definitions of financial need and coordination and collaboration with higher education. So we will need to have some expertise added to our current staffing configuration around those decisions having to do with vocational rehabilitation practices and what kinds of jobs would be comparable or above current compensation levels that are spelled out in Section 1, Sub 2, Sub C in the bill. That's not an expertise we presently have. We also will need a way in which we can recoup a portion of the administrative costs to oversee this program. I have not had a chance to see the Dash 1 amendments, so as we read the bill in our very small agency, we really didn't have a way in which to gauge what size of program we might be considering and the potential number of beneficiaries. So we would need to work with the folks who are involved in the proposal in order to be able to get a better gauge of that to help put together a reasonable fiscal impact.
Okay.
I'd be glad to answer any questions the committee might have. And
well, I can see your dilemma here in understanding how you're going to administer these. Mr. Root, did you look at other options for administration of the fund?
Yes, I did. I had some meetings with the Department of Business and Consumer Affairs.
And?
They are really more geared up towards the preferred worker program, the early return to work programs, and things like that. But basically, as in my testimony, shows that it's not really giving enough benefit. And I kind of wanted to separate the grant program from DCBS. A lot of injured workers that go through the workers' compensation system, I really can't come up with the words right now, but they don't want to go back there. You know, I mean, you stick your hand in the oven one time and you get burnt, you're not going to want to stick your hand in the oven again, you know. And that's kind of the thing that I was leaning towards the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, mm-hmm. as far as the administration of the program, because they're wanting to get an education, they're wanting to go to college, you know, and whereas the workers' compensation division within DCBS is geared differently. I mean, that I know when I was going through my claim, I was promised vocational assistance for the resignation of my position. Well, I talked with my division manager, and he led me to believe it was 2 years, you know, and I got into the system, and then I found out it was only 12 months, you know, and I finally negotiated up to 16, but after I penciled everything out, when they finally, you know, I signed a CDA is what happened.
CDA?
It's a claims disposition.
Thank you.
And those things, I mean, we're not supposed to have intimidation and coercion within our system. But I believe in my heart, and as the sun's going to come up tomorrow, that that's what's happening. That's how I felt. What they did was they threw the money that they were going to use to retrain me with the 16 months into my CDA. And when I got home, I penciled it out. I had to keep my family going, pay my mortgage and my bills and everything for 2 years, and it just didn't cover it, you know. And so I didn't go to school. I wound up starting my own business, and then I had a worsening, mm-hmm. and I lost my business. I lost the money that I got, you know. And clearly, if they would have kept with me, I don't know whether I would have had that worsening. If they would have kept with me and did my schooling like I was supposed to, I would have been probably in a sedentary position where I wouldn't have gotten into this condition in the first place. And that's kind of what, you know, what I'm talking about is it's inadequate. The vocational assistance is inadequate right now.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Root. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Davey, for recognizing Mr. Root's contributions to injured workers. He does work very hard. Okay, I'll ask you folks to step back. Ed Glad, Mr. Delmazzo, did you want to testify? Okay, just come on up briefly. I'm not going to take too much awfully lengthy testimony. Go ahead, Mr. Glad.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Ed Glad. I'm with the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. When I saw this bill come to the bill stack, it really it piqued my interest for a couple of reasons. A number of our locals here in Oregon have started sick and injured funds, as well as on a different level, scholarship funds for their children or grandchildren of people that are working in the carpentry trades. And one of the things that I have advised a number of the locals who have started these funds is to work through the Oregon Scholarship Commission, because I personally, through my local as well as through an education foundation in Yam Hill, have used the Oregon Scholarship Commission to help arbitrate, you know, the various applications for scholarships. It takes it out of, you know, my kid should get it, and the Oregon Scholarship Commission really has the capacity to be able to do that. So when I saw this come across the bill stack, I thought, well, this is actually a pretty good vehicle for those people in our ranks that find themselves injured that are qualified to go on to higher education. Not everybody is qualified to do that or has the interest or the attention span to apply themselves to go into higher education. But there are those that certainly want to go that direction. And when they find themselves in the injured category and are applying for retraining, oftentimes it is on a very low level and ends up being very unsatisfactory in terms of the outcomes. In the construction industry, certainly you can go into building inspection. They get through the building inspection thing. How many jobs are there for building inspectors? And for those that, you know, have to crawl under buildings that, you know, have back or leg injuries that, you know, really prevent them from doing that, higher education might actually be a good opportunity. Funding it, obviously, as SAIF is explaining it, is a little bit more difficulty through the programs that they have or don't have right now. I think that there is room to see that it might very well be that the beginning or the nest egg of this would come through contributions of the insurance companies that are responsible for providing for injured workers. But I could see public-private partnerships in the sense of trade groups being able to say, hey, we would be willing to participate in such a program through the Oregon Scholarship Commission because we have members and we have the ability to raise funds among the members to be able to access this. I think this is a really good discussion and a good start to go in the right direction, and the Oregon Scholarship Commission is a good vehicle to look at for being able to provide opportunities for injured workers. So thank you. I'd answer any questions or...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Glad. Mr. Delmazzo?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Ernie Delmazzo. I'm a volunteer executive director of Injured Workers Alliance. We're a statewide support and advocacy organization. We support Senate Bill 305 because we believe it will increase retraining opportunities so workers can again become productive members of our society and allow them to adequately provide for themselves and their families. At the same time, this bill will reduce expenditures made in various state and federal programs that unfortunately bear the costs of the inadequacies of the workers' comp system. Injured workers are at a competitive disadvantage in the job market. Many times the pre-injury employers do not want to take them back or for some reason or another can't because of their disabilities. And sadly, workers' compensation provides reemployment benefits to few workers disabled from injuries, according to a state study released in 2001. And I indicate the name of the study. In addition, a major 2001 study conducted by the state of New Mexico by the RAND Institute for Civil Justice that compared Oregon to other states found that Oregon workers who receive permanent partial disability experience significant and sustained earning losses. They receive only 42.4% of pre-tax wage replacement for the 10 years following injury. I may ask people in this audience how they would feel about losing more than half of their wages for 10 years. And in reality, it's probably lifetime for most of these workers to see that kind of drop in their wages through no fault of their own, simply because they were injured on the job.
DCBS biennial report on the workers' compensation system was released in January 2004. It stated, and I quote, "Oregon's traditional vocational assistance program was scaled back in 1987. This was a result of House Bill 2900. In 2003, 130 workers returned to work after completing vocational assistance. This compares with about 3,600 workers in 1987. Workers who completed vocational assistance plans have employment rates that are at least 20% higher than workers who don't receive work assistance. Substantial difference." And again, taking on top of the fact that we're seeing a 42.4% of wages compared to the previous 10 years. In other words, successful vocational retraining is now only 3.6% of 1987 levels, 3.6%. Also, current law permits a delay of a year or more between eligibility and the start of retraining. During this time, workers receive no workers' compensation, wage loss benefits, nothing. This creates a situation where workers are financially starved, and many give up their rights to vocational assistance to settle for pennies on the dollar, and you heard Scott address that issue. Vocational retraining for calendar years 1989 as a percentage of premiums was 3%. That dropped to 1.2% in 2003, according to the state's biennial report. You know, workers' compensation promises employees a remedy, and it includes a productive life after injury. It's just simply not reality. As far as MLAC, MLAC has addressed issues sometimes for about 15 years without adequate remedies taking place. As an example, MLAC was formed in 1990 due to Senate Bill 369. And as one example, from pretty much the moment it was formed, there was problems discovered in the IME issue. We have intergovernmental documents attesting to this, dating back to 1996. MLAC formed a subcommittee on IMEs in 1997, and absolutely nothing happened. It did absolutely nothing. We now have a situation where after legislation proposed 2 years ago, another IME subcommittee was formed, and we may actually see this issue being addressed. So essentially, we're talking about 1990 to 2005 to see some sort of remedy addressed. Although they are looking at a vocational retraining bill this session, it's already been watered down, like most things that come to MLAC. To be polite, I'll just simply say that MLAC is dysfunctional. I don't believe you can trust MLAC to solve any of the problems within the workers' compensation system. At the same time, it seems strange that you, elected by the people, the state of Oregon, are abrogating your responsibilities to an appointed committee that has a history of approving legislation later found unconstitutional. Senator Morissette, it happens all the time. In fact, almost every major issue involving workers' comp has been found unconstitutional by the courts, yet MLAC passed it through. And that's a sad commentary.
Okay, Mr. Balmazzo, we'll have to talk about MLAC another day. That's not really...
I would love to see this committee move this forward. Obviously, SAFE's input is paramount, though not legally required. I would like to see what ideas they have to address their concerns. But I do believe that in some form that this vocational assistance training should take place, simply because the current system is sorely inadequate.
All right.
Thank you very much, and can I answer any questions?
No, I don't think we have any, but I appreciate you coming. And I just need to ask you, Mr. Delmazzo, my office sent you an email today. Did you receive that?
Yes, I did.
About the bills up tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure you're on the same page.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Thank you. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 305. We're not going to go into work session on that bill today. I need to have some conversations about it. Pardon?
Well, I'd just like to make a quick comment.
Then we need to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 305.
I think that we have struggled with this issue for many, many years, and we dealt with it during the interim in the General Government Committee. We had long hearings on SAFE and related issues and came up with some principles. I don't know if the principles were ever moved into legislation, but our committee came up with principles. One of them was that the workers' comp system is set up for the benefit of workers originally. That was the purpose. Secondly, it does it is there to save money for the employers. We recognize that. And then there are some other principles. But I think that the workers who were the reason the committee was set up in lieu of individually suing their employers, it took the pressure off the employers. It was it did take the pressure off. But the workers, I think, are the forgotten people, and so we're very frustrated. Some of us are very frustrated and trying to make reforms, and we've tried everything, and it's difficult, and I'm hoping that this will move along, and we will hopefully come back with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morissette, and I agree with you. I just need to look at this bill a little bit more. I think it has some problems, but I really like the concept, and I'm just not sure if we can get them all worked out right now, but I do want to take a look at it a little bit more. Okay, I'm going to reclose public hearing on Senate Bill 305. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 779. We have 13 people, at least, signed up to testify on this bill. I know you all love it, and it's great. It's going to Ways and Means, if our committee so desires, and we've got 30 minutes basically to hear testimony. So I don't want to turn anyone away, but the bill has no opposition here. So if you just want to come up and tell us a few good things about it, that's great. If you have written testimony, don't read it. We can read. So I'm just going to go down the list as I see it. I have Alice Lyman, and then Presbyterian Preschool, Barbara Malloy. You have how many people, Barbara, do you have?
Three, one to two.
Okay, why don't you three come up first? And Alice, you can wait a second.
Okay, Madam
and
Chair.
I'm going to have Marjorie tell us about the bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 779 creates the Oregon CARES Program in the Child Care Division of the Employment Department for the purpose of providing wage stipends or scholarships to child care providers for training and education. This bill appropriates money from the general fund to the division for the program purposes and declares emergency. It's effective July 1st, 2005, and again, as was stated, this is going to Ways and Means because there is a $1.5 million appropriation and Section 3.
Okay. Thank you. Now, who's the one speaking?
I'm the one speaking. My name is Barbara Malloy. I'm the Associate Director at the Presbyterian Preschool and Child Care Center.
And take it away.
Okay. I'm honored here to be sitting next to Connie Shepherd and Linda Buckner. These are both lead teachers in our center. All three of us have been beneficiaries of the Benton County CARES. And we want to tell you that difference it has made in our center as well as in the community. Benton County CARES offers scholarships, and we have benefited from those directly. Our center has improved its service and the quality of care that it has been able to give to the community by being more inclusive to special needs. We have been able to also lift the morale of a lot of people who are making less than our children make, clerking in a store. We tier our wages according to education, and the biggest barrier was just getting that education. The most we could ever offer was workshops, which offered no permanent benefit to the employee. So Benton County CARES made that difference, that we were able to take the time, personal time, to be able to go to classes, get the education that was needed, to come directly back to the classroom, directly back to the community, and we did it as a community. It was not just one center. It wasn't just three employees. I have employees that have come through, and they have moved and gone to Portland and stayed within child care because of the education that they have received through this program. Thank you so much for hearing us.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I think we all love this program up here, so we'll just listen to the rah-rahs. Ladies, thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Alice, where are you? Okay, you're all by your lonesome, so why don't we just let you speak, and then we've got a threesome coming up after you. Rob Wagner, Elizabeth Jacobs, and Jane Wagner. You can come up after Alice.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
While she gets situated, because I'm going to have to leave to go to another committee for a bill, I just want to say I have new experience with the benefits of incredible child care people, and they are literally... I have such a new appreciation for the incredible work that these folks provide, and so I'm sorry I might not be here to vote yes on a bill that it just makes me feel good to vote on helping folks who do child care out.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. It is so nice to have you join the rest of us who have experienced child care issues. All right, Ms. Lyman, introduce yourself, please.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Alice Lyman, and I work for Lynn Benton Community College. I am the coordinator of the Benton Cares program. And I'm here to support the bill, 779. I've worked in the field for many years. I've taught Head Start. I worked as a director of a preschool, and I... what else did I do? I was a certified family child care provider for 16 years myself. And the mission of CARES, I'm really excited about CARES, because the mission of CARES is to improve the quality of the child care workforce through education, compensation, and retention of the child care providers. It provides them with incentives to take more training, as Barbara said. We have a problem in Oregon in that our children are not getting quality child care overall. There's only 20% of child care that's considered good to excellent, and that's nationally, and Oregon also has a similar issue. In addition to that, one out of every four children in Oregon enter kindergarten not ready to learn, and the reasons for that is because they have poor early care environments for a lot of cases. Our child care providers in Oregon, based on some data from Lynn Benton and also from the six large county study, which was done in 2004, show that 70 to 80% of the child care providers in Oregon have no college degree, and 60% of child care providers in Oregon have never taken a college class. They have to take some training. There's some training required, but they may take a two-hour training or a four-hour training. So the emphasis of this program is to really raise the quality of care through provider training so that they can reduce the barriers. Some of the barriers for child care providers is the low wages that they make. They make poverty wages, so they really don't have the money to go to college, in addition to the time and energy, in addition to the fact that often courses aren't offered at times that are accessible to them. So Oregon CARES has really worked, this project has really worked as a catalyst to allow providers to access college. In Benton County, we worked really closely with the community college, and because we had scholarships available, prior to this time, we had one to two providers who were taking courses during the course of the year. Because of this grant, we now have 16 to 17 providers taking a class every term, which means we've had like 55 to 56 providers taking classes every year. So as you can see, that's just an enormous change. And before, people thought, oh, they didn't want to go to school. But we've discovered through this grant, yes, they do want to go to school. Yes, they do want to access that higher level education. There were just too many barriers prior to this time, which was the cost of school. Classes weren't offered at times that were accessible to them. So we've dramatically improved the quality of care for children. And across the state, I work with the other counties. CARES is in seven counties right now, and we all work together to share our learning and our knowledge. And the program has impacted over 4,000 children and families in the 2 years it's been in place, raising the quality of care for those children. So we who have been working in the program are very excited about it, but we want you to hear from those who've actually benefited from it. But I do ask you to please move this bill forward, because it's really benefiting children. We like to think of it as an investment in our children, an investment in the future of the state. So thank you for listening to my testimony. And if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Lyman. It was good to hear how many providers are accessing the program through the grant. That's great. Okay, I appreciate your testimony. We'll hear from Elizabeth Jacobs, Rob Wagner, and Jane Wagner. And then on deck is Jennifer Borders, Kim Ashley, Julie Fosbeck, and Marianne Asbury. I think I said that right.
I'll go quickly because I'll just go really quickly. So Rob Wagner with the American Federation of Teachers. We represent workers in pre-K all the way through university faculty. We love this bill. I wanted to make just a real quick comment and then introduce Elizabeth Jacobs, who's a teacher at Fruit and Flower Child Care Center and president of our local with Willamette Valley Child Care Federation. Just about the bill, in Section 1D, there's a dollar threshold of $12 an hour. That figure is, I believe, 4 years old. And although it is the vast majority of teachers at centers and child care providers make a great deal less than that, often, very often, without benefits of any kind, we just appreciate the equity language that's found on page 2 and would appreciate either a conceptual amendment or if we're going to move this bill to Ways and Means, we could probably take care of it there as well. But yeah, to establish a $15 an hour eligibility standard for being able to access the scholarships or the grant.
Mr. Wagner, let me stop you there.
Yeah.
This committee does not participate in conceptual amendments.
Okay.
So if you want an amendment to this bill, we'd be happy to get one. And bring it back on Monday or Wednesday.
I don't want to hold up. If you're going to move the bill, we're both in work session, is this a public hearing?
This is a public hearing, okay. But I was planning on moving it today.
Okay.
So if you don't want me to move it today, I'll hold it.
I would say, Madam Chair, I would say don't let this hold up the bill. We can fix it in Ways and Means if we need to. So, yeah.
Okay, then I'm prepared to move the bill. So the longer you talk, the less time I have to move it.
Okay. So I'll turn it over to Elizabeth. We just wanted to make
that little point.
We'd be glad to talk with you.
Okay, well, you know I'm down in Ways and Means, so we can get that little amendment down there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Elizabeth Jacobs. And I thank you for this opportunity to speak today. I am a lead teacher at Fruit and Flower Child Care Center in Portland. I've been there 6 years now in the same classroom. I have a bachelor's degree in early childhood education, and I'm currently making $10.44 an hour. State licensing requires that I complete 15 hours of continuing education every year, which I'm very happy to do. As a teacher, I feel I'm always learning. And Fruit and Flower is unique in that we bargain a contract with them in which they've agreed to pay up to actually 30 hours of continuing education for us each year, but we're definitely not the norm. Most other providers do not have this arrangement with their employers. Even with a degree, every time I take a course or a class, I bring something new to my classroom, and I feel that there's so much out there beyond just your basic child development. So those who already have degrees in this field are definitely would benefit from this program. I feel that early child education is such a fertile field, and there's always something new to learn, and I want everyone to have that opportunity. In 6 years, I've seen a lot of providers come and go in my own classroom and in the center as a whole. And they've been very talented caregivers who've had a lot to offer, but just moved along. And I feel it's because they didn't feel they had support in that environment. New providers have a lot of interest and very little education. I see some really strong potential teachers come through. It's my desire to strengthen and empower this workforce because quality care begins with quality caregivers. I think we need to really shift our focus to that. The internal support exists in each individual center, but I really feel if new providers see that the support is actually coming from a higher level, specifically the state, then they'll feel that this is really something they can sink their teeth into and continue with. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Wagner.
My name is Jane Wagner. I actually never met these people before. It's part of that man being a Wagner as well. I'm from Eugene, and actually, Senator Walker, you are my senator.
Oh, well, welcome.
And I guess I don't need to convince you folks, so I won't, and I gave you some written testimony that
you
can read later. I do want you to know that I'm a member of Stand for Children. That's a grassroots organization that advocates for the rights of children. And as well, I'm an early childhood professional and have been working in the field for about 30 years. So this is an exciting time for me to see that maybe we're making a step forward in professionalizing early childhood education. The one point I did want to make is just today, interestingly enough, I was reading a current journal that I received that talks about a 40 years, well, actually the study of about 35 years that looks at quality preschool experiences and follows those high-risk children who were in preschool 35 years ago up to age 40, looking at the quality of their lives and having a control group that was not receiving these early childhood services and the ones who did. So I'd like to quote from that article. The benefits of high-quality preschool education extend not only to young adults, but also to adults in midlife. These are lifetime effects. High-quality early care and education programs not only raise high school graduation rates and test scores, decades later they lead to higher incomes and lower crime rates. The return to the public on its initial investment is larger than we previously estimated. I think that's a pretty significant statement, and I'd be glad to make that available to you if you're interested.
Well, thank you. I think it moved Senator Morissette, so she has a question.
Well, I was on the board of Head Start for a while, about 15 years ago, and we were looking for validation of that, the work, and there wasn't a whole lot out there, and I'm interested in what you have. Is that more than anecdotal? Or?
Oh, yeah. This is the Perry Preschool Project.
Yeah.
It's probably the state of the art law.
Well, if we could get some, I personally, I'd like to see that because
okay.
It's something.
Okay, I can turn the whole magazine over to you and get another copy.
Senator Morissette, I had my office some time ago download the entire report from the Perry Preschool study. And I think what I'll do, because it's really fascinating.
Well, what I want you to know is that the latest information, these people are now 40. The last study was done when they were 27, and that's where they got the figure of for every dollar spent in early childhood, you could save $7 later in remediation. They're now saying for every dollar spent in early childhood, you can save $12 later on in remediation as those adults go through life with lower crime rates, lower welfare costs, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a very comprehensive study, and we had a presentation on it at some point during this session.
We did, and we had a joint meeting. Seems to me.
Well, anyway, this is very recent, within the last 6 months or so that the latest data has come out.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm glad you got to meet some new folks. Okay. Now we'll hear from Jennifer Borders, Kim Ashley, Julie Fosbeck, and Marianne Asbury. But you know, we only have three chairs, so I guess it'll just be musical chairs for the moment. Oh, gosh, no. Oh, we have four chairs now. Great. We just need to make sure that whoever's speaking is close to a microphone.
Very creative.
And if you get started with the first person, that'd be great. And so far, we're doing really good on time, ladies. We have three more people to hear from. So, we'll hear from you and then move on.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
My name is Jenny Borders, and I work at Corvallis Community Child Care Center. Sorry. I wanted to speak to you about how it's benefited me. Sorry.
That's all right.
I started this, took my degree.
Breath. You know, I had to do, you know what happened to me this morning? I was out of the room when it was my turn to carry a bill on the Senate floor today because I miscalculated which bill was up. So I was in the back in the Senate, Secretary of the Senate's chambers dealing with some administrative stuff, and I heard my name. Senator Walker is carrying, and I'm like, oh, no. So I ran like crazy, and then when I got to the Senate, of course, I slowed down. But it was a panic, and I just thought I was going to die, and someone said, breathe. So I breathed, and that made me feel better. So there you go. Now I hope you're comfortable,
yes.
And we're going to hear about this great program.
Yeah, I've been working in this field for 17 years. I started out at $4.75 an hour. Oh. Working mom wanted my degree, but with my wages, I couldn't afford it. But within the CARES, I was able to graduate this June with my degree.
Cool. So. We're so excited for you.
Yeah. And with that degree, though, now I'm only making $9.28 an hour. So this bill, with a stipend, I'm able to provide for my children. So.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much. $9.28 is better than $4.75, but it's not quite there yet where you need to be. But I'm really glad that you got through the program. Thank you. Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for hearing our testimony today. My name is Kim Ashley, and I work with a local child care resource and referral agency for Marion Polk and Yamhill County. So I'm coming to you today from the perspective of those who work with parents who need child care, and from the perspective of helping child care providers meet their educational needs. I've given you a lot of facts in my testimony, and like you said, you're all able to read this, so I'm not going to repeat what I've written in here. I'd like you to know my perspective and be involved as a CARES coordinator in this project for 2.5 years. I've seen a twist and change of thinking of how people are viewing child care. It's no longer a babysitting industry. It is a child care profession. And the main thing that child care providers are wanting, whether they are center staff or whether they are family child care or certified child care providers, is to be viewed as a professional. They have certain things that they have to meet as far as standards, as far as the state goes. But I've seen in the 2.5 years in working with them that they go so much more above and beyond, not because they get paid well. And unfortunately, we are losing at a very high rate quality child care providers in the state of Oregon because, unfortunately, they can't afford to keep their business intact for below poverty wages. They can't afford quality trainings. They can't afford to have the tools they need to address special needs issues, language issues, so many things that young children are facing. And I know we've all heard a lot about new brain search and developmental needs of children. In Marion County alone, in 1 year period, over 2,330 children under the age of 3 needed child care. When you take a look at that and realize that by age 3, 85% of the core brain structure has already been formed, you have to take a look at who are the people providing care for those 2,330 children. And this I know about child care providers. They want to be viewed as professionals. They want to stay in their profession because they dearly love it. As we all know, it takes a lot of patience to work with young children. They advocate for parents and services to parents in our trying economy in the state of Oregon. They advocate for the rights of children who are facing special needs issues. They do so much more than just run a business in their home. They're advocates, and they are teachers. So what can we do in the state to keep these people in this field that are so critical to these early years for children? I think CARES is the answer. I have seen that it's make a difference. I have seen the quality of education that providers have taken. And I've seen a shift in that thinking that there's such an investment that needs to be taking place in the young lives of these children. And so please take a look at our testimony. I've also included testimony from providers that are at their home taking care of children. And so please take a look at their testimony. But please take a look at Senate Bill 779. I believe it can answer some questions that our parents are facing, children are facing, and providers are facing for the sake of the children and for the sake of the people taking care of them. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ashley. And you did great. without reading your testimony. I mean, you know this issue, and that's what I want to hear. I want to hear from the heart. Some people have trouble speaking without their testimony, but I'll look at your testimony and read it for more detail, but I really enjoyed hearing from you because you really care about this. So thank you. Okay, who's next?
I'll be next. Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the committee. My name is Julie Fosbeck, and I'm also in your district, Chair Walker.
Hi.
I'm from Eugene. I also work for the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency that's in Lane County. I've actually been working on this project even before the six county group started. We had an initial project that started with Wayne County funding. And so I've been working on the project a little bit longer, and watching the growth from that point to now has been extremely exciting. I've have experience working in the field as well, teaching experience as well as center director experience, family child care experience, and much like for Jenny, my first teaching experience 25 years ago, I made $3.12 an hour. Mm-hmm. And, you know, quoting Alice Lyman, the wage and compensation survey that we have done as part of this project showed that the average family child care provider is making $3.27 an hour. And it's frightening to think that 25 years of growth has had no growth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, much of my testimony, you have written testimony for me as well as some providers in our area. And I think the only thing I really want to add, because we can duplicate everything, each one of us can say the same thing over and over again, is that I see an impact on not just the providers who are getting the wage stipends and the supplements. We're improving gaps in that training that's meaningful and quality training that has an impact on those children, not just... a lot of the promotions that I'm doing in our area talk about taking professional development with purpose. You know, it's not just a matter of collecting hours. It's a matter of getting quality and content that's meaningful that you can put into practice with your children. And so I see all these providers excited about professional development and what it means to have a professional path that has meaning towards their families, and they're not even getting the stipends, and it's exciting for me. And I really hope that this bill moves forward. I can see you're excited about it, so I won't say any more about that, but thank you for hearing us today.
Oh, thank you for coming up. I appreciate it. I know it's an hour and 5 minutes from Eugene to here. One way.
Autopilot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Ms. Asper, by process of elimination, that's who you are. So.
Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marianne Asbury, and I'm a child care provider in Northeast Salem. And this month is my fifth anniversary, and I have received support from CCIS from the very beginning, moving here from Norway and starting my own child care. And because of the tragedy that happened in September 11, 2001, I almost lost my business. I had just started it with money from my husband's account, and I wasn't willing to give it up. So when CARES came around, I was just really thankful because I was able to pay my property taxes with that, so we didn't lose our house.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I lost my house, I lost my business, and I had put too much into it. Through the 5 years I've been doing this, I have about 300 to 350 hours of child care education with support funded by CARES, and I just wasn't willing to just let that go so easy. I had... experience 15 years as a secretary in a law firm. I could easily get another job, but I wanted to stay home with my son and also support quality care for other children. So when CARES came around, things turned around for me, and I have now a successful part-time child care that I offer to the community, and part-time care is in high demand right now because of people having more part-time jobs because of the economy we know about in Oregon. So it's going well for me now, and I think a lot of it, almost all of it, is due to CARES. So thank you very much. I'm praying that you'll keep it going.
that would mean
the world to me. It has meant the world to me and to my parents, I've heard, too. So.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee?
Thank you for hearing me.
Well, we appreciate it. We're glad the program is here to help you out. All right. Well, all four of you could step back, and we have three more folks to testify. We're doing really good on time. I think we'll end at 4:15 as we planned. Bobby Jo Sanders, Jan East, and Mary Nemers. Why don't you start, since you're at the table first?
Why, thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Bobby Jo Sanders, and I have a child care program in West Salem, and that's in Polk County, and I don't receive any benefit from CARES, and what I'm here for is for you guys to expand that for me, because I just live over the bridge, and my kids and I, we don't get to participate in any of the programs. I don't get stipends, nothing. And I started my child care business because my son has a cleft lip and palate, and 8 years ago, no one would care for him. And so I had to quit my job and stay home, and so that's why I do daycare today. And quality child care matters, and if I could get a degree, that would just further my business and further my teaching for my kids. Kids are graduating from preschool in my home, reading and doing... I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional because my program matters. They do math, subtraction, addition, multiplication before kindergarten. And I work so hard for these children, and I'm not compensated enough. And with this program, it would just mean that much more for my kids that I can provide. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. We appreciate hearing that. And I think our goal is to expand this program as well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll be very short. As you can see, we're
first
pretty...
First, you have to say who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Jan East. I've been the director of the Little Beavers Preschool in Corvallis for 32 years.
Little Beavers.
We are a passionate group. I just want to end with one thought. I have my testimony that I've submitted to you that really focuses on the impact of education. But I want to just make, I guess, this statement. By providing quality education to one teacher, many children are impacted. Mm-hmm. By providing an early education to one child, changes the life of that child and benefits the entire community. We want to thank you for your support and for many people who have been involved with CARES. Because of CARES, tonight I have 50% of my staff, five of us, attending, starting another class at LBCC. CARES did this for us, and that's what impacts our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Nemers. I'm the Executive Director of the Child Care Resource and Referral Network. I'm here today representing One Voice for Child Care, which is a coalition of parents, working parents, child care providers, and child advocates who believe that a child care system that is affordable and accessible and quality is what our state needs, and that investments such as Oregon CARES is what we need to that will improve the developmental outcomes for children. The reason that we are focusing on CARES as one of our priorities this session is that we believe that to retain and attract child care providers is what our state needs for the child care industry. And very pleased, as all of our members who are not able to be here today will be, to hear of your support for the committee for this bill, and we thank you.
We thank you very much also. Did we have any questions of the committee? I think we're all sold on this idea and this program.
Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your day and coming.
Are you sure you don't want to invite Joy Marshall up here?
I saw Joy sitting in the back. Joy, did you want to make a comment? We'll just acknowledge Miss Joy Marshall from Eugene. Why don't you... we'll give you 1 minute to just sum it all up, Miss Marshall.
Well, thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. Thank you, Senator Morissette.
My name is Joy Marshall, and I work for Stand for Children. We're a statewide advocacy organization, and we support CARES because we believe that those first years are so essential, and we have to support them as a state. And I can sense the support in this committee, and I really appreciate it. I guess I wanted to take the second to ask you to really try to help us get it through the Ways and Means process, because that's going to be tough in this tough budget time. So if you can take that extra step beyond that today, that would mean a lot.
You can count on it.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. We're going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 779 and open a work session. Senator Starr, I bet you have a motion for me.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 779 to Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 779 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, that bill is out of here, and I will take it to my heart and put it on my priority list. And I want to thank all of you for coming and testifying today. It's really a joy to have so many of you come up to the state capitol and share your comments and your concerns, and we really appreciate it very much. With that, I'm going to close the committee. And colleagues, next week we are going to have a very busy week, so be prepared to work a little bit late. We're adjourned.
Thank you.